Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Thanks. I've got a headset and I always worry it's malfunctioning. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Sorry for the delay. This is Kyle Campbell from Board Support. I'll get the folks there in the room back into the meeting here shortly. We ran into some technical issues with the simultaneous AC meetings tonight, so please stand by. Thank you.
Somebody give me a thumbs up if they can hear me. No, I'm doing that. Not in the room.
Okay. Mark can hear you. Okay.
Is Chuck, can you hear me?
We're already behind. I'm going to call the regular February meeting of the Fairbanks Fishing Game Advisory Committee to order. It is Wednesday, February 9th. We're starting about 6:52, a little late due to technological issues. Looks like everyone now has joined the Zoom. Those of us that are here in person are here at the J.P. Jones Community Center. And in an effort to speed things along as far as roll call, I'll let Mr. Opie note those that are attending via Zoom from the participant list. And here in the room in person, we have Austin Smith, Levi Llewellyn, Jeff Lucas, Warren Jukke, Mark Richards, myself, Kurt Schwalm. We also have Virgil Umpenauer, Mike Tinker, Bill Larry. With us tonight are also Jennifer Uhaus. Mark Nelson from the department and Mackenzie Mitchell from the Board of Fish.
It's John Haddix.
John Haddix from, yes.
I called him Mark too when he walked in.
So. I followed your
lead. Yeah, it was my fault.
Okay, that's my bad as well.
Sorry, John.
I'm not even hardly started. I'm already off to. Yeah, we have a quorum. I introduced the guests that were in the room. Mr. Opie, are you good with getting the guests online off the participant list?
Yeah, I think I've already got them while I was waiting for audio to start. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. This is John Siegfried.
Now I think I have audio in the room.
Okay, Kirk, yeah, I think I already got everybody while I was waiting for the audio to start here.
Okay. Yes, my comments, I'm going to refrain from comments. We have plenty to do. Mark or Jeff, anything from game and trap other than what we're going to take up this evening?
Take it.
Ms. Vick, anything, comments on fish subcommittee other than what we might put down on the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the. No, we'll wait for
for a later discussion. Basically, we had a review of the hatchery comments, and I'm going to revise those based on our meeting and send them out to members, and we're going to have a full discussion at the March 7th subcommittee meeting.
And just in case I've forgotten, that meeting is already scheduled. We don't need to schedule it this evening.
It's already scheduled, correct. And also we had a report from Andy Griska from the department, which was really interesting about grayling in the Chena River and pike. And so I will, in the interest of time, send along Andy's report to members after this meeting. But it was good news that there's some potential for grayling fishing in the Chena. And I see Klaus is online, so if he wants to make a brief comment, that's fine. But that's all I have to report.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Members of the public, I turn first to people in the room. Any members of the public had anything briefly they wanted to bring to the committee's attention? I'm seeing a lot of head shaking. Members of the public that have joined us via Zoom, anything that anyone wanted to bring to the committee's attention? You can either use the hand wave feature or unmute yourself, try and get my attention. Seeing none, that'll take us up to concerns or comments of AC members, any member of the AC, and again, I'll go first to those of us here in the room. Any members of the committee have anything they wanted to bring to the committee's attention?
There's just a few, Kirk, on some of the proposals. I'd like to bring up a few that weren't marked, but we can do that when we get to those comments. We'll start looking at the ones.
On the statewide board of game proposals? Yeah. Okay. Any members of the committee that have joined us via Zoom have anything for the good of the whole? Mr. Kramer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My video on. Yeah, I want to bring up in the member comment section an issue that's occurred recently with the Board of Fish, and that is the board-generated proposal by member Mackenzie Mitchell to open or allow more set netting opportunity in Upper Cook Inlet. She generated that as a board-generated proposal at a recent meeting. It's coming up for the Board of Fish deliberations next month. And I spoke with Mackenzie earlier today. She has not changed her mind about supporting this proposal she made. But I think, given, serious concerns that I and other fishery-minded members have about this, I'd like to bring that up for discussion. And we've prepared a kind of a formal statement of request to Ms. Mitchell that I'd like to read into the record and ask, board member comments or for unanimous consent that this be official statement we make to member Mitchell regarding both her recent actions in Cordova with the Dipnet fishery boundary, but more importantly, the opening of set netting opportunity in an area where kings are severely depressed in the Kenai River.
I make a comment.
Yeah, just 1 second, Mark. Mr. Kramer, is that proposal 283?
I have it as RC15. I don't know what formal proposal number it was eventually given, but what I have available to me tonight is RC15. I think that was the original draft by Ms. Mitchell. I don't know that it changed much before it was printed in the proposal book, but I don't know. She's there today. I'm glad she is. Maybe she can field some questions or clarify whether anything's changed from this RC15 that I have that I can read into the record tonight.
Ms. Mitchell, am I on track with the 283?
I have one hard copy of it.
But if that's not the right one, I'll pitch it.
This should be it.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to look on the list with how it's done. Probably didn't get a number.
So yeah, this references as formerly board generated proposal number one.
Yeah.
Same one. Mr. Richards.
Yeah, I just want to ask Mike, if it's a board generated proposal, doesn't it have the approval of the entire board?
My understanding procedurally is Member Mitchell introduced it, came up for a vote about whether to put it on for the statewide meeting in March. That vote was 4-2 with members Jensen and Israel Payton voting no, but there'll be formal deliberations on it and, you know, voted up or down in March. I don't even know whether there's a public comment opportunity in the next month. Maybe Ms. Mitchell can address that, but, you know, that's one of my main concerns is how this came out of cycle as a board-generated proposal to allow additional commercial opportunity when the Kenai River has not met its king escapement goal in the last 3 years and 5 out of the last 9.
Mike, there's 7 members on the board, so if it was 4-2 and 2 members didn't vote, that doesn't add up.
I'm sorry, I said 5-2.
Okay. I just wanted to comment that I feel uncomfortable that you're singling out Mackenzie Mitchell when it's a board-generated proposal from the whole board. I just wanted to get that on the record.
I think Ms. Mitchell will take ownership. This was what she proposed, and 5 members agreed to put it on the March meeting.
That's correct. I presented this proposal and then it passed back to you.
Still, it's, if the board supports it, then it's from the entire board.
I just note that the comment, public comment due date is March 11th. And Mr. Kramer, so is that essentially a request to add this onto the agenda?
Yeah, we can take it up maybe under new business.
Right after the department and trooper update, maybe?
Sure.
Anybody object to that?
No.
See no objection, that'll be added to the agenda. It made it through to the agenda that went out, but I would like to remove the discussion of hatchery profits and disaster declaration for fisheries. I think in the interest of time, that's probably better taken up in subcommittee, or maybe already was taken up in subcommittee. Anybody object to pulling that from the agenda this evening? I got a little off track. Any other members of the committee have anything they wanted to bring to our attention?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Speaker.
I talked to Ms. Vick this afternoon, and I think all the members should take a close look at the fisheries forecast for 2022. The one in question in the proposal that Mike was talking about is terrible. And the Copper River is, again, terrible. And forecasts in the last few years haven't been met. So not only do we have a situation where the forecast isn't good, but our ability to meet it is probably really a question too. They've been pretty optimistic the last couple of years. So I think just an alert that we will have to take that up so people think you need to talk about it.
Copper River red salmon was maybe 3/4 of average as a prediction?
It was less than that of average, but the prediction was, I'll just as an example put one out there, was 1.3 million to come into the fishery as harvest, and the harvest was 682,000 among all branches, with a little less than 400,000 in the commercial fishery, which was, for them, now a declared disaster. So that makes it even a worse situation in terms of what happened. So then the projection for this year is not exactly the same. So that's the big question mark hanging up there is where they get the book. We haven't for 3 years. So that's the kind of thing we're facing with looking at these fisheries issues as we go into 22's fishing season. And you know, just to put an exclamation point, the copperhead fishery, of course, is extremely important to our constituents.
And
go ahead, Mr. Rampino.
Okay, I just spent 6 days with Salmon Treaty Panel meeting for the Yukon, and well, some of this got covered in the fishery subcommittee meeting. But anyway, we had the scientists from Canada and our side both there at our meeting. Of course, they were all on Zoom, but we had a lot of various reports. And what has been happening is, you know, people will talk about the global warming and all this other stuff, but what's happening is it has got the ocean temperature, has got a little bit warmer, and what happens when it gets warmer is the productivity goes down. And when I say the productivity goes down, what happens is the zooplankton, which the small fish eat, that is not as nutritious as it is when the water's colder. And then the salmon need more calories, more energy when the water's warmer. And so all these fish have gotten, besides the numbers decreasing because there's not enough food for them, then the ones that do make it are much smaller. They're much... The Bristol Bay fish this year weighed 4.5 pounds on average. That's the sockeye. The kings were exceptionally small. We got 24,000, right at 25, between 24 and 25,000 fish to distribute to the villagers of king salmon from Bristol Bay. And the ones that went to the lower Yukon, Jeff Schultz kept real close track of what they weighed because they came in totes. And we had to box them in the 50-pound boxes. So he got half of them, and I ended up getting half of them. Just came to the village and up in Yukon. But the ones I got averaged just a hair under 5 pounds. The ones he got, he said, told me, averaged 4.2 pounds. That's better than getting king salmon now we're talking about. And the Copper River, the sockeye on it weighed less than 5 pounds. The fish that go up the Kenai River, the sockeye there, used to always be 6.5 pounds, real big fish. And that's how the department was separating what Kodiak was catching on the three big cakes where they're intercepting fish, and they didn't know where they were going. And one of the ways they were trying to figure it out, until Charlie Swanton did a scale pattern analysis study, that's how they tried to figure out which ones were Cook Inlet fish. The Cook Inlet guys were raising hell with Kodiak, but they didn't start doing that cake fishing until 88. When they really nailed a bunch of them. So, but those fish are real small now too, because they're starving to death out there. And so things just, the departments are making all these forecasts, and they haven't met any of them, hardly, using the science they've been using. And that's why on the Yukon, we've got people from both countries trying to figure out how to come up with a new way to develop escapement goals. So, and I just wanted to bring that out as your kind of basic background information of how important this is. And the Yukon this year, I know all you, or I think all of you, no, you haven't all heard. Okay. The summer chum run for the Yukon, normally the run, and when I say the run, that's the number of fish that actually enter the river, not the statement, is roughly around 2 million. This year, I believe it was 158,000 is all that came across the border, or came past the sonar. And almost all the spawning grounds are above the sonar. The sonar is 130 miles up the river. But they have, they count fish on the Andrieschi River, and that's counting the fish, they counted on the Andrieschi River too. $158,000. I believe that's what it was. I could be off a little bit. But on the fall comes, we average $1 million a year. And those, the closest fall come to the mouth is the ones that come up the Tanana River. And genetically, the Tanana River fish are different from the ones going to Canada. And so, at the sonar, they have apportionment nets, and they run from, I believe it's 2 1/4 or 2 1/2 inch stretch mesh up to 8 1/2 inch. So they get white fish all the way up to large pink fish in those nets, because the sonar doesn't tell you what kind of fish it is, it's just how many fish went past it. And so, the fish, and then they also do a genetic analysis of them. You just have to clip a little piece of skin off to do that. The ones that are still healthy, they release. The ones that they look like they're going to die because they got gilled or something, then they give away to the people that live in the local village for statistics. And they cut way back on the number of chestnuts in Barry now, but the portion of net, that is at Pilot Station, which is about 130 miles, between 120 and 130 miles up from the border. But there, and then they can, but what they did is, at post-season, they took all the genetics, because when they switch over from summer chums to fall chums, they're mixed. And this is the figures after they got all the genetics done, and they didn't really finish that until late November or December. But anyway, so we ended up with 102,000 fall chum salmon. And the average round is $1 million. On the coho salmon, the average round is in the neighborhood of 250,000, and we got 35,000 or 36,000. The whole works is totally in the toilet. And there was absolutely no directed fishing for subsistence or sport or anything on salmon in Yukon River, period. But Norton Sound chum salmon is not much better. And the Custer Quiz in the toilet as well. And Bristol Bay. But I know a lot of fishermen in Bristol Bay, and I talked to some of the leaders there about this. That's how we ended up getting the king salmon for the villagers, because the professors donated those fish, and then they donated a bunch of coho from Kodiak, the professors did, and the Coast Guard actually flew them here, all the way to Fairbanks.
In the C-130. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that, Virgil. We're going to have to keep it moving.
No, I know
we've got a lot to do.
I just wanted to point that out about the forecast right now, the department, the regular way you figure it out is not working.
Right.
Because of the productivity.
And just quickly, is everyone out there joining by Zoom able to hear people in the room all right? We have this rig together on my laptop and a speaker, and just want to make sure there's no complaints. All right.
Yeah, this is John. I hear you fine.
All right. Thank you.
Chuck, I hear you fine, too.
All right. Great. And just for those of you out there know, I can see you on my laptop screen, but everybody else in the room can only hear you unless they peek over my shoulder.
So in other words, you don't care what they're wearing.
I can spin my laptop around. We have the minutes from January 12th.
The minutes be approved as presented.
Second.
And I'm going to ask for unanimous consent on approval of the minutes. I'll pause for a minute to allow anyone to object to that. Seeing no objection online or in the room, that will leave the action of the committee. Brings us up to approval of the agenda with the edits discussed earlier. Again, I'll just ask for unanimous consent that be the action of the committee. Seeing no objection in the room, no objection on the Zoom. That will be the action of the committee. Is anyone aware of any old business? Seeing none, that brings us right up to new business, starting with Hartman for a well-trooper update. And I saw that we had, I believe, Sergeant forgive me if I'm incorrect about that, Valentine, who's joined us from the Wildlife Troopers. Sergeant Valentine, anything that you wanted to update us on?
Not a whole lot. I've pretty much since Christmas, the Wildlife Troopers have been busy dealing with moose in some sort of way, either with dog mushers, dog kennels, in people's yards, things like that. I had received a few emails from people who frequent these meetings, and so I kind of figured they were going to be here at this meeting and wanted to talk about it some more, so I made myself available. But that was about it.
I do have a question for Danny.
I appreciate you being here. It looks like Mr. Richards has a question. I guess I'd just ask real quick, too. Last month, Sergeant Potter indicated that maybe for a week stretch or so, there was one DLP moose a day in the greater Fairbanks area. Has that number dropped off, hopefully?
It has probably dropped off a little bit from that, but it's pretty close to that. I mean, I was on two moose calls today. I didn't have to shoot either of them. But I know since, I think there were three, you know, the first one was on, there was one on Thursday, which is in the paper and made national news. And then there were two more over the weekend since then that I know about, and I wasn't even working the whole weekend. So, it's happening a lot. Oh. And there's bison on top of that, too, that are doing crazy things in Delta that deal with also.
I'll go first to Mr. Richards here in the room, and then I see Mr. Derrick has his hand up online.
Yeah, thanks. Dan, Trooper Valentine, we had a question on Proposal 117 from the troopers at our subcommittee meeting. Require hunters to possess proof of completion of required educational certifications in the field. And we wanted to ask you about that and how you view that. Is that going to cause issues? Do you think that people that should have it won't? Is it going to cause more enforcement violations?
I don't think so. Most of those weapons-restricted hunts, and there's not too many around here. I mean, the one that pops into my mind all the time is the muzzleloader one down off the Rex Trail. But most of those people who have those permits have those certifications, but it's super simple for easy if they have it with them for us to know that they have it. So I think it would help everyone out, especially us. Then we won't have to go back and try to figure out if they do or if they don't have it. But I know definitely some of them have, they will bring it with them, no matter, even if they, it's not a requirement.
And that was part of our concern was, so are you really having to spend time when you get somebody and they don't have that right now to go back in the office and spend time on the computer, you know, confirming they have passed it?
I guess what I'd say to that one is I don't have that experience since it's only the Rex Trail is the only one that I've ever even patrolled that had the muzzleloader hunt. But I could see in areas where there's a lot of more weapons-restricted hunts, like down by Anchorage and things like that, that people would probably spend some time to make sure all those people were really certified. Troopers.
Is that information available if you call back to dispatch, or do you have to go back to the office and get into WinPhoneNet to get it?
It's a WinPhoneNet thing, yeah. Our dispatch doesn't have access to WinPhoneNet. It's just something the troopers have. And that would be like one more computer program I'm sure they would not want to deal with is WinPhoneNet.
You got any other questions on that, Jeff, from the subcommittee?
No, but, I guess so. This is Jeff. I was just wondering, if you stop someone and they can't prove it, do you end their hunt there, or do you just take their name and they can continue to hunt until you can verify it?
Yeah, you know, in that situation, they would probably already have a bunch of other information. I probably wouldn't end their hunt. I would probably let them go on and do what they're doing, because by then, if I would if they harvest a moose, they know what the consequences would be if they don't have that certification.
Right.
I've already met them in the field.
And that could be
a little... if they didn't have it and they continued to hunt, and then, you know, that would be... I can't expect some of that would do that, and then...
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense of, I mean, I guess in many ways I don't expect you to know, but either, you know, in within D detachment or statewide, how many citations are written for not having that certification in those hunts?
I don't know. Yeah.
The reason, Sergeant Valentine, is that this is shifting the burden from the department right now with protection to the hunt. And I know you have a couple of ways you can do that. You know, you can expect to have a picture of it on his phone and that kind of thing. But the question in my mind is it a problem or is it a non-problem? Is this something you guys think it'd be nice to have, or are we having a problem when you come back to the office and run your list of names and contacts of people that are not qualified and then for you've written citations? If the answer to the citations is zero, then we don't have a problem here. And just putting this burden on the hunters is not really helping them at all. And that's my question to you is, are there citations being written for this, or are we in a situation where this is just kind of nice to have?
I don't know that answer, Mike, but I can at least try to find it for you if you want.
Okay. I think that would be good before we get this and have to make a comment to the board again. You certainly understand it's not our business to make life easier for the troopers if we put a burden on the hunters.
Heaven forbid that.
Yeah.
Mr. Derek, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, Trooper Valentine, I'll just make it short. Have you guys received a lot of calls about starving moose or moose that are down and just don't seem to be able to, you know, continue on?
Yes, definitely.
I've got a friend that works on some of the airport towers on some of the domes, and I think he's made 3 calls to you guys. And, you know, just got to want to get a feeling for how many you're getting calls.
We probably take 6 calls a day for moose. A lot of the ones that they're not causing a public safety hazard, we're not going to if they're just a moose lying down. I mean, I know between us and Fish and Game, I think most of the trappers have already gotten as many moose as they want. So I did see that one proposal for the dog mushers to be able to take inedible meat too, because the starving ones we don't give to charity. It's just the trappers that get those, and I think there's going to be quite a few of them this year. And I mean, they've already started to just expire in people's yards and things like that, and that's going to probably happen all the way through spring.
Okay, thank you.
Well, as always, Sergeant Valentine, thanks for joining us tonight, helping us out with some of these issues. From the department, either from the game or the fish side, does anybody have anything they wanted to update the committee on? Klaus, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just get ahead of it now, but what Gail Vick was alluding to is the information on grayling and the tuna and pike and Harding Lake. And so I'll keep it brief, but in Harding Lake, it's been closed for 20 years. That's close to pike fishing. Lake levels were down for a long time. They're coming back up, and we'll be doing a study this summer, and I think we'll be where we want to be at as far as changing to catch and release. And so we're hoping that there might be a proposal ready to go for this year's AYK, for the 23 AYK meeting, so we can open it to catch and release 3 years sooner than waiting another 3 years. And same thing with the Chena River. We kind of changed our study design, and it looks like there might be some opportunity for grayling and like a proposal that could come into play at Rubio is basically opening it up for one fish bag downstream of the dam and having a spring spawning closure. And that would be a much simpler regulation and provide a little more opportunity for everybody than the current, like, 4 weekends in a row, kids-only events. So we're looking for a little bit of help on those two proposals, and that's pretty much it. So thank you.
Any question for Klaus?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Levi. So if you guys do the one fish bag limit, will you discontinue the kids' weekends, or will that be in addition to it?
No, that would just discontinue the kids' weekend, because a lot of people just don't follow that kids' weekend, and there's a lot of kids that just go fish and keep a grayling in the lower river, so they're not getting into trouble, and it just kind of cleans up matters. So if we're hoping we'll find out what we want to find out with the population, and then that way, like, we don't have to wait another 3 years again. So that would be our preference, is to make something happen in 23.
What proposal number is that one, Klaus?
There is no proposal. Proposal would have to be submitted by April 10 to the board.
I'm sure Gail wrote that down.
So that was just a heads up of what's coming, so Gail doesn't have to mention that later.
Appreciate anyway. That.
Mm-hmm.
Tony?
Can you hear me, Kurt?
Loud and clear.
All right. I just wanted to kind of echo a little bit about talk a little bit about the moose situation. I echo a little bit about what Dan said. We are getting calls like crazy. There's been, we've had to shoot a couple or, you know, a fair number of moose. There's been quite a few DLPs. There's been quite a few people kicked or hit or knocked down by them. I think over the last few days, at least three or four, some of the people aren't injured, but nonetheless getting knocked over by moose. But, we were curious about how widespread these conditions are in the area, because I was pretty concerned that all of 20A and 20B was like around town here. We could have a bit of a problem. So we have been out looking. I've been on a couple helicopter flights all around 20A and then out in 20B, particularly western and central 20B. I haven't been off to the east yet in 20B, but what we're finding is the worst conditions are right here around town. They extend south of the Tanana River about 10 miles. Once you get south of that, it's not nearly as bad. There is a lot of snow on the western side of 20A near Healy and Denali Park. But as you come east across the foothills, it gets better and better. The heavy rain didn't appear to hit the foothills or the hills and the mountains as bad as I thought it might have. There's plenty of sheep habitat right now that's accessible for the sheep. The wind's blown tremendously out in 20A once you get south of the Tanana by 15 miles or so and all the way to the south. The snow was pretty deep in the Yannert drainage, the Healy drainage, Moody Creek drainage, but the moose seemed to be all right in there. When you got east of the Wood River, it looks just kind of like a normal winter in that country. In 20B, Minto got the icing pretty good. There's a pretty thick layer of ice in the snow in Minto Flats. The wind has blown a lot of the snow around out there and made it possible for the moose to get around. None of them are belly deep. I haven't seen a moose belly deep in snow yet, except around town. There was no rain in the snow from the Catalina and Tullivanna drainages, so it doesn't appear that it rained very far north of Fairbanks. So I guess just what I'm sharing is the worst of the conditions are right here around town, kind of from the Nana down towards Delta, But once you get a little ways north of town and a little ways south of town, it's not nearly as bad. The critters don't look nearly as bad. The caribou in the Alaska Range were all in windblown slopes. I looked at close to 1,000 caribou out of the Delta herd, and none of them were in snow deeper than ankle deep, and most of them on bare ridges. The sheep I saw looked pretty good, and overall the moose out there didn't look too bad. So I just want to share that what we're seeing around town is pretty nasty. It's unlike anything I've seen since I've worked for Fish and Game, but I don't think it's everywhere. It's not all of the area that's that bad.
That's good to know. Thanks,
yeah.
Tony.
Yeah.
Al, do you have something quickly?
Yeah. Tony, have you been offering any targeted hunts since we, you know, have a situation and basically in the Fairbanks Management Unit area?
No, I didn't do that because we hadn't been using the targeted hunts enough. Of course, this is how it works, Al. We hadn't hardly used the targeted hunts the last number of years, so we didn't give any out. We had to put it out there in October for people to apply for, and we didn't. This is the first year we didn't do it because we just haven't been using it. And then this happened.
Yeah.
But
nice.
The reality of it is the calves that are just laying down and dying are, I'm not sure many people want to eat those.
Well, I was curious about the ones that the department had to shoot. Those are starving calves?
Well, the ones dying are starving calves, but a lot of the ones that have attacked dog teams and kicked people, that's the cow protecting the calf or just,
yeah,
you know, the adults. So we certainly could have used it in that situation, probably. But a lot of those are in places that we'd be leery to send people, like neighborhoods and stuff, too. So
yeah,
we're probably not missing out a lot, but we probably could have used that this year.
Well, I'm just curious on how good or how effective it is for a tool for the department to have targeted hunts. It may work better down in South Central than it does in the interior.
Honestly, it's kind of a pain. It's almost easier for us to just go deal with it.
Nice. Thanks, Tony.
Tony?
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Larry.
How is 28, like the Little Delta area in that?
You know, Bill, it looks pretty good. I was pretty happy with the way it looked over there. Near the Tanana for the first 5-10 miles, maybe not, it's fairly tough conditions. Once you get towards the foothills in the Alaska Range, it looks about normal over there. The snow measurements I took in that area were less than 2 feet deep.
Well, thanks, Tony. Appreciate you being here as always. And I'm going to try and keep this moving along. And I don't think I said at the beginning of the meeting, but we have a hard cap of 10 o'clock tonight just because of the facility that we're in. So that brings us up to the discussion of Proposal 283, the Board of Fish, board-generated proposal. I'd start by opening this up to Mr. Kramer, and I have a copy, Mr. Kramer. I'm going to try and share my screen, if that might help.
Thank you, Kirk. So I got up, and I understand we're in a time crunch here for various reasons. So, you know, I'll try to be brief, but I think this is a critical issue that we need to discuss, and I'm glad Mackenzie Mitchell can attend the meeting. I spoke with her before the meeting, let her know that we were going to be discussing this board-generated proposal that she generated, and I might have some questions for her. But this is of great concern to many who are
concerned about the king salmon statewide, in particular, in this case, the Kenai River. To me, it has potential domino effects to the Copper River in that at a recent board of game meeting, Ms. Mitchell proposed that this board generated a proposal out of cycle, which caused a lot of concern to John Jensen, a commercial fisherman and usually a strong yes vote on anything that increases commercial opportunity. He voted no to advance this to the March meeting on procedural grounds, primarily that this should not be something that a board member brings up out of session. It's purely allocative. The proposal is fairly brief. It says, amend the Kenai River Late Run King Salmon Management Plan to allow fishing with set gillnet gear within 600 feet of the mean high tide mark in the upper sub-district when sonar passage of large late-run Kenai king salmon exceed 13,500 fish and Kenai and Kasilof River sockeye salmon statement objectives are being met as follows. This is the existing regulation. It's 5 AAC 21359 and it's titled the Kenai River Late-Run King Salmon Management Plan. The current regulation says that if the projected late-run king salmon escapement is less than 15,000 king salmon, 75 centimeters in length, the department shall close the sport fisheries in the Kenai River. That's happened for many years now. And the salt waters of Cook Inlet north of the close the commercial drift gillnet fishery in the central district within 1 mile, et cetera, and close the commercial set gillnet fishery in the upper sub-district of the central district. And her proposal would add, except as provided by the following. And so the language he proposed is, if the escapement of Kenai River late-run king salmon, 75 centimeters long, exceeds 13,500 fish, keep in mind the escapement goal is 15,000, a number that has not been met for many years now, and Kenai and Kasilof River sockeye salmon escapement objectives are being met. Fishing with set gillnet gear may be allowed by emergency order in the upper sub-district. And it has some additional language, you know, that opportunity shall be managed, minimize harvest of king salmon. We all know that set gillnets operated on the beach outside of the Kenai River are going to harvest king salmon. At this point, we just think it's indefensible and not biologically sound to have any additional harvest opportunity in the commercial fishery in the upper sub-district that are going to intercept some of these late-run king salmon. We think the Fairbanks AC, given that, you know, Mackenzie Mitchell is from Fairbanks, she occupies the informal interior seat, and, you know, is seen as someone who should be representing upriver interests and conservation concerns. We drafted this statement of request to her. I can just read it. It's up on the screen. Actually, I don't need to read it. Everyone has it available to them. But I think the key points in this is that we would ask her formally to consult with the Fairbanks Advisory Committee, before taking actions like she took down in Kenai, for example, voting no as a tie-breaking vote for extending the personal use fishery boundary at Chitna, where her caused our FAC-supported proposal from the Chitna dip netters to fail. So just some facts that are cited in the statement of request is that, and it gives a history, request that Board Member Mitchell more fully consult with the Fairbanks Advisory Committee and Interior stakeholders regarding decisions that are affected by her decisions. And then it cites her vote at the Prince William Sound meeting to not extend the Chitna Dipnet boundary. She was the tie-breaking vote. With her vote, we would have more space in Chitna to fish. We talked about that at a meeting a couple months ago, but and also at that Prince William Sound meeting, she was chastised by the board to become encouraged to become more familiar with the board process because she voted abstain on a few occasions, which is inconsistent with board precedent. Usually board members present at a meeting unless they have a conflict of interest vote yes or no on proposals. They don't abstain, and she was chastised for that, for doing that on occasion, as was another member, Godfrey. We'd like to formally request that she withdraw her support for her board generator proposal number 283 being considered at the state board meeting in March and April 2022. The main reasons are it was generated outside the normal board of fish meeting cycle, which is detrimental to the established public process. Upper Cook Inlet is very contentious. These are some of the most contentious meetings that the Board of Fisheries does. It's the upriver consumptive users, the personal use fishers in the Kenai River, you know, versus the drift netters and the set netters out in the Cook Inlet. They're all going for the same fish, and particularly with kings, there's just not enough of them. So proposals affecting allocation in Cook Inlet should come in the normal cycle. You know, we'd say she's not worked with or taken input from the affected user groups. I talked to Mackenzie before the meeting today. She said, in fact, she did. She met with all the stakeholders in Kenai. She said she spent some time on the Kenai River with the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association. And she met with fish and game representatives, both sport and commercial. Maybe she can elaborate on that. But I can safely say that no one from Kenai River Sport Fishing Association would have, you know, approved of this proposal to allow more set netting opportunity. And, you know, I don't know what the sport fish folks down there said, but, you know, I think it's a reckless proposal to offer more set netting opportunity. They're going to harvest these late run Kenai Kings for the following reasons. The Kenai Kings have, these late run Kenai Kings have an escapement goal of 15,000. That goal has not been met for the last 3 years, in 5 of the last 9 years. As Mike Tinker said earlier, department projections for this year are low, but we've learned in recent years that these projections, these forecasted runs, have not been accurate. They always tend to be on the optimistic side, and particularly with Kenai Kings in their situation they're in, it calls for conservative management, not more commercial harvest. So the Kenai River has failed to achieve the minimum optimum escapement goal or sustainable escapement goal in 3 consecutive years. That's the, you know, most salient fact, I think, that, that makes this a reckless proposal to allow more commercial fishing interception of these late run Kenai Kings, even if there's a surplus of sockeye bound for the Kenai and Kasilok. We have to let more sockeye go in order to do whatever we can to meet this escapement goal. You know, it's the similarities I see around the state is, you know, if this is adopted, and, you know, particularly if pushed by interior representatives on the Board of Fish, the ARAM intercept fishery could say, well, we want more fish too, especially if we're catching, you know, an abundance of pinks or whatever, and they're intercepting Yukon River and Kuskokwim River kings and chums. We know they are. And sometimes we have to let a few fish go by in order to preserve these stocks of concern, which Kenai kings certainly are. In the Copper River, We've had years of high abundance of sockeyes. Well, the commercial fishery has been shut down because of conservation concerns over kings. We certainly wouldn't want to see this theory spread that we need to open up more opportunity, particularly based on a lower escapement goal than what's biologically or optimally set. So her proposal would modify the King Salmon Management Plan to reduce the goal from 15,000, which again has not been met, down to 13,500. Basically, she would allow more fishing if 13,500 Kenai Kings were escaped. It would de facto lower the escapement goal to 13,500. And I would submit that that's a number far too low for the sustainability or the recovery, certainly, of Kenai River Kings. And this board generator proposal would eliminate the paired restrictions, that is, restrictions on the commercial fishery and the upriver fishery. Again, there's been no sport fishery for kings in the Kenai for years. But the management plan is always to pair these restrictions between user groups so that we all share the burden of conservation. And I don't think that's facilitated by this board-generated proposal. So, again, thank you, Mackenzie. I know this is not an easy meeting for you. I didn't want to ambush you. We talked about it before the meeting, but this is an issue of great concern to many folks. If you can address some of these things, but, I would ask that the committee agree that this can be a formal statement to her that, if she's going to do things like this in the future, to consult with us, maybe before and not doing so, just come out of left field at a remote meeting. And, take a move as important as this in the face of such a conservation crisis with Kings.
So just so people that aren't in the room know, we don't have hard copies of this statement here in the room. So I put it up on my screen for those on the Zoom, and then I stepped away from my own computer so that anybody that wanted to could get behind my laptop and take a look at it. So that's why you were seeing other faces in there. And I guess I would first turn to other members of the committee. Anyone else have any thoughts on what Mr. Kramer has just spoken to?
I would like to ask Mackenzie a question. I don't want to prolong things, but
yeah. Mackenzie, you want to speak to this?
Yeah,
sure. I can say a few words to this. It's completely up to the Fairbanks Advisory Committee as to whether or not they want to support the statement that Mr. Kramer has provided, and I don't have any interest in speaking directly to that, but I can speak to the complexity of the issue is kind of understated in that the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, that 13,500 is the sustainable statement goal set by the department. So it does maintain a level of conservation in terms of low king abundance in overabundance sockeye salmon. It's, I believe that pair restriction is a result of inefficient fisheries management, and it's a shame to see a ton of fish go by and not be harvested at the expense of a user group that could be harvesting them, and those pair of restrictions can result in that inefficient fisheries management. And in this particular situation, the set netter typically fish on 1,200 feet. This is a 600-foot fishery, which there's statistical data points that suggest that it has a much lower king harvest rate or bycatch rate. There's a lot more to this issue. I did travel down to Kenai. I spent several days down there. I gave a day of my time to each user group. I met with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, sport fish side of things. I met with commercial fishing side with sport fish or with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I gave a day and a half of my time to Kenai River sport fish. I went out on two sport fish boats on the Kenai River. Both times I caught kings, surprisingly. I met with everybody. I met with Yusita. I met with the set netters. I met with Eastside. I met with Sea Loss set netters. So I spent a lot of time on this issue trying to educate myself on it and understand it. I've also made myself available to the public by email. Call me. I'm happy to respond to anybody and engage with the public, both in the Fairbanks community and across the entire state, since my service on the board is, while being a member and residing in Fairbanks, is to support the state and the state's fisheries. But I do live here in Fairbanks, and I make myself available to everybody in Fairbanks, just as I do every other person in the state of Alaska. So it's completely up to you and the Fairbanks AC whether or not they want to support this, and that's completely okay by me, and I will continue to make myself available and discuss these issues further with people if they have concerns.
I'm going to go just in order of people I saw trying to get my attention. I'll go first Mr. Richards, then Mr. Tinker, then Mr. Derrick.
Yeah, Mackenzie, are you aware of the criteria about the that the Board of Fisheries has?
Yes.
You are? Can you tell me which one of those of the four criteria that you felt was not being met that caused you to introduce this board-generated proposal?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the record going through each one of those criteria when I presented the sports generator proposal, and I'll just reference all those comments that I made.
Are you aware, though, the history of the controversy of board-generated proposals?
I am.
Outside, especially outside the cycle?
Yes. And trust me when I know that I was walking into what I'm sitting here facing right now.
Okay. That's all I have.
Mr. Kinder.
So you consider this an emergency?
No, that's why I voted against it.
Then why did you take an avenue that the public or any advisory committee cannot take? Because we can't come up to anything that's close to the cycle unless it's an emergency. But as a board member, you thought that you could go ahead with it.
This issue came up as an emergency petition, and it also came up as an ACR. And both times I voted against it because I did not believe that it met that criteria. However, I did believe that it met the criteria of a board-generated proposal.
How the cycle? I'm not concerned about the proposal. I understand what you did there. I want to know why you thought it needed to come out of cycle. Why you needed to change this right now?
Because it is an issue that we were already being pushed back a year with COVID for all of our cycles and everything is a little bit different when we're continuing to push things out in a time of dealing with a pandemic. And I do believe that there should be something done for this fishery, and it did get pushed back.
Well, historically, there are a lot of us that have pushed against ever having a board generated proposal for anybody because of the lack of public involvement and discussion on it. Among the advisory committees and public, just so you know, that predates you by a while, but that's been the standard. When we have tightened up when people can put in even ACRs or additional comment on proposals or include amendments, that kind of thing, which are precluded now by the timelines, it really looks bad for a board member to do that outside. That's what I want you to see where you have really tripped up here. As far as the public is concerned. If you let this go in cycle and done it in concert with public proposals, and then you have a lot of kickback up because then we'd get a longer review be published in that. We're here now, and that's why I asked you if you thought there was an emergency situation, because I can tell you no emergency exists here. This would not be a problem to wait another year to put into effect. Now, the other thing that I think you did not take into consideration, I think it's critical here, and I've talked about a little bit, is that you know the numbers on it has been predicted. You're not going to open any fishery anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, therefore, again, there's really no reason to put it on the books now.
If the Department of Tools are able to meet the sustainable statement goals,
if the majority of everybody thinks it's a good idea, and what we're telling you is we don't think you expanded your review. You might talk to a bunch of step matters. If you had talked to, like in the copper example, you can go right down the line. You can talk to dip netters and fish wheelers and whatnot. It's a different story out of all of them because they all want to try to improve how they get their piece of the pie. Step matters are no different. Now, I would ask you, for example, the department, did you get a formal input from the department on your proposals before you made it at the meeting? And you asked the administration of the department whether or not they liked this proposal or not.
You asked the department.
But we're talking about nobody in the department at a regional level has the famous sign off on proposals for the department. That goes up to the level and on the commissioner. So what I'm telling you is if you have a K-9, meet with K-9, they tell you something. That's not the department's opinion. That's that local opinion. And you will get people in the department who really stepped on doing that kind of thing. So that's why. I'm trying to use this as a learning tool for you a little bit on how to best get this done so that you get the boxes checked as you're going along.
I appreciate it. I did. I got in the T&I
Alaska Department of Fish and Game Officers, spoke with the sport and the comm, and then I drafted this with the deputy of comm and sport fish at the large level.
Yeah, so the higher up the line you take an obvious rate, the better that you get into. I think the two dangers are taking advantage of going on a cycle by a board member. That's going to be not looked on by the public very well. And the other is being so close to these predicted, if you look at the percentages of what the statement goal is against the forecast, it's a dismal picture. You're talking about being able to catch between 6 and 16 percentage fish as a total for a harvest, and that would be included in the inlet and the river. So, and I guess you will hear quite a bit from the public and other board members here on the side of conservation. You're not doing this here. You're numbered it into the very lowest conservation number that they've come up with. Anyway, I was talking to you to try to go at least to the people who, and there are a lot of them in this community that help sponsor you for your appointment and your confirmation when you go outside the normal cycle type of thing and have a good reason why you're doing that and time you're doing it. Because this library committee, for example, is not allowed to do that.
Well, I make myself available to everybody. So if you email me or call me, I will make myself available to everybody.
Yeah, but that's not you deciding to go outside. That was anything to do with contacting people. That's up here. And Mark knows he can't do that. We can't do that. And as a board member, you should be really cautious not to try not to do that thing. Unless there's, that's why I asked you about emergency. Unless you actually think that under the definition there is an emergency.
Well, there is a concern with overstatement as there is with understatement as well.
We've worried about overstatement in Kenai for about a million years.
All right. I'm going to go to Mr. Derrick and then quickly to Mr. Barrett. And now I've got 2 hours to do about 244 game proposals. So, Mr. Derrick.
Yeah, Mackenzie. You know how hard we worked at the Board of Fish meeting in Prince William Sound. We RC'd that proposal 18 twice to make it acceptable to all the concerns there were with the proposal. Your vote basically squashed that proposal with reasoning that made no sense to me and a lot of dip netters. And at the previous Fairbanks AC meeting, you also stated that it had to do with allocation, as if it wasn't the board's job to look at allocation. That is the board's main job, is to look at allocation issues. That's why Fish and Game, when they make comments on proposals, if it deals with allocation, they say we're neutral because it's an allocation issue. If you had a chance to vote on this proposal again now, would you feel the same way?
I'd review the material again.
If what?
I would review all the material based on whatever new information. Whenever the proposal comes up again.
Well, it will come up again, but to have a reasoning that if it had to do with separating the boat out farther because of the safety issue, that they could just drift down the river farther. That made no sense. So,
Mr. Derrick, I just tell you that you probably don't want Ms. Mitchell to actually answer that question, because if it does come up again and she were to vote in favor of that sort of proposal, that vote might actually be challenged because she based her decision-making off some preconceived notion rather than the information presented at the meeting. But I'll leave it at that.
Okay, and I'll leave it at that, too.
Mr. Barrett, did you have something?
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. it's a learning curve. You know, you have a new board member, haven't really been involved with the AC process, haven't been involved with the Board of Fish process. You know, a real energetic, knowledgeable person that, you know, really goes out and tries to do the best thing for, you know, her constituents or for the state in conservation. You know, I heard her say she went out and she, you know, went fishing with the set netters, and she went fishing with these people and with the sport fishermen. You know, we all make mistakes. I don't agree with everything she's done. You know, but she made a valid effort. She made an opinion, and, you know, didn't agree with, you know, some of us longtime people that are involved with the politics and the fisheries and the science for, you know, eons. You know, there's a little forgiveness there. I think she's realizing that, you know, the ACs play an important part, and you know, it's not all what it's cracked up to be. I think even Israel Payton, you know, as he went on and visited every user group, got a different opinion, you know, was able to formulate things. So, as much as it hurts sometimes, and I disagree with some of those votes, and I called her on it myself, you know, we should still use this as an educational moment and try to build her as a better board member. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ms. Hughes, did you have something you wanted to say?
I want to make sure that we get to the wildlife proposals because I'm very interested in those. I do appreciate the opportunity to be there. I have represented the ACF potential for fishing. I have been spattled upon by commercial fishermen down there. I have represented the fishing issues in several other capacities, in the Department of Game, employee representing the state before the Federal Assistance Board. I don't believe in throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I don't believe in working pop up out of the cleanup. We've had some these discussions with folks that get someone elected, whether they're senator, representative, congressional, and we disagree with them once. Fair. I do think that opportunity that we met a couple of years ago. I had a conversation. I had reservations. That took me a very long time to earn. It took a lot of effort to earn. I've been working on these issues since 1992. I don't feel like I'm turning 53, but it's been 30 years now. And I made phone calls. I talked directly to Gina Rotaco about your appointment. I discussed your confirmation directly with people who confirmed you. And I didn't expect some of the decisions that you're making. And I support the statement that although you see that you're available, I didn't expect to have to call you after things like this were introduced. I think that making yourself available could look more along the lines of asking people, what do you think about my introducing this proposal before the proposal is going to be voted on? And I felt like I deserved the opportunity to say that. I'm saying it in good faith, and I appreciate that opportunity.
Quickly, Roger.
Okay, you tell for the only trick the commercial fishermen over the statement, which is total BS. When I got on the board, the state of golf at the Kenai River was around 300,000, and I left it, yeah, that kind of went on the road. Before the Europeans came with modern fishing equipment, those runs sustained themselves. So what they call all fish went up the river. Anyway, you fell for that. They put in a petition, and you already said you voted against the petition, did the same damn thing. They put in a petition, allegedly catch the damn pink salmon. So I went through the data of when, the run data, of the timing of when the fish got there. Really what they wanted to do was catch the very fish they want to catch in this proposal here. The late run sockeye and the early run coho. That's what they wanted to catch. So I said, okay, These are the run dates when all this happens. The peak of the pink salmon run, you're going to be nailing these late run sockeye, which we have already in that management plan restricted their fishery. No more dam emergency orders and all this crap. Just the two periods a week. That's it. We've already done that. So they were trying to figure out
how to know.
Okay, fine. What you do if you want to catch the pink salmon, it's simple. You have a dip net fishery, and then you can release the sockeye, a few peas come in, and the coho, and you can keep the pinks. They didn't want to do that. You need to amend that damn thing and put in...
I'm about to break out my square jar for a
couple of okay. Okay, anyway, that is how we get the fish on the Yukon when we get the fish commercially. We fish with the dip net now in the lower river and release all the peas. That's what they do. And so that's just food for thought for you. Inexperienced, like Al said, and you fell for the oldest damn trick in the books from your commercial fishery. And especially those damn set netters that nail the hell out of those king salmon because they swim close to shore and those nets go plumb to the bottom.
Look, I've got a few thoughts on this, and right now I'm thinking that we can raise our words without raising our voices, but I will say I'm generally on the topic of board-generated proposals that I'm probably less opposed to them than the average process. And I would remind everyone that there have been times with the Fairbanks AP that they have benefited from board-generated proposals that we, for ideas that we supported, that did not meet ACR or emergency petition criteria. And when they're for things that we support, we don't seem to have a problem with them. In terms of general notice, this board-generated proposal was developed from the Board of Fish website on October 20th, 2021, with a comment deadline of March 11th, 2022, which provides approximately 6 months of prior notice and comment, which also makes me wonder why it is that we are spending time on something that arose 4 months ago at this meeting tonight. It, as far as the comments on the vote on the chipnet dipnet fishery, at a prior meeting over at Fish and Game headquarters, members of the Fairbanks AC certainly made Ms. Mitchell aware of the general displeasure with some of those votes. As to Proposal 283, again, comment deadline of March 11th. If the AC wishes to take that proposal up and support it, it's something the AC should be doing, and we'll have the opportunity to take that proposal up and provide comments and recommendations to the Board of Fish on that proposal. In general, I think that this conversation is straying somewhat from issues into personalities. And I have always been willing to attempt to deal with issues rather than the people and attempt to remain respectful to those that I might disagree with their position. I think that this is very close to the line of taking a position on an issue into a personal attack. That honestly may be an appropriate thing to weigh in on at the time of nomination or confirmation. Seems like not much more than a
charter. You come up going for the March meeting. There is a public meeting.
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I pulled it off the website.
Yeah, this would be the way I'm doing. That's what I'm saying. This would give us
to go very quick, like less than 60 seconds to Mr. Brett and then Mr. Derrick.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your comments, and I think they were, I received them well. You know, not only did Mackenzie Mitchell submit this board generated proposal, but the Board of Fish itself accepted it. And so she has some merit that from her colleagues that, you know, we should look at this, or they should look at it, and we should comment on it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate that. The Board of Fish website
Okay, so it's an additional work that you guys follow the
board. Someone needs to mute their phone. Yeah, someone needs to mute their phone.
Someone needs to mute their computer and mute their phone.
I see that Mr. Marcy appears unmuted.
Actually, he might be joined on two separate devices, and I see a number.
Yeah, if not me, this is Reed here. It's not my phone.
Sorry, Richard.
Richard, are you muted?
Hi, Jan.
It's us. Since Kyle is, I do not have to be
Mr. Derrick, did you have a comment?
Kirk, I was just going to address all the backfeed noise.
All right, thank you.
Wondered if I was the only one here.
All right. We spent some time on this. Is there a motion to be? Oh, Ms. Mitchell,
I'll give you the last word.
I just want to say that, you know, when I'm making my decisions on the Board of Fish, I have taken every effort to review the material provided to me, to discuss things with stakeholders and the public, make myself available. I've traveled to inform myself. I've read countless papers. I've spoken with Fish and Game and professional staff, and I am making my decisions based on the information in my conversations with people, as well as my background in fisheries economics. And I am making the decisions that I feel are the best, given all the information that I'm reviewing. And if it's not pleasing to people, I do apologize, but I will continue to review all the material and make what I believe it to be the best decisions for the state.
That's all you can do.
Thank you.
Do I hear a motion?
No, that motion is needed. What we need to do is add it to our agenda to comment on it and let it go with that.
Are you talking about the proposal itself, 287?
Yes.
Well, I'm not going to put words in Mr. Kramer's mouth, but it sounded like he wanted the full AC to take some official action on the proposed language in his letter.
No, I don't think that's necessary, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Ms. Mitchell being here at our meeting. We had a really good discussion. I don't think we need to take up any more time. I know we have some important game proposals to deal with, and I think we just need to have our comments made in time, and I think it was a fruitful discussion. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Anybody have any objection to a short break before we take up board game statewide proposals? 5 minutes or so.
Thank you.
Okay, 5 minute break.
I'll see you, everybody.
Yeah, except that right now they have to restrict it where they come out of the water, and what the proposal is trying to do.
Okay, I can tell you that. All right. We're going to come back to order at 20 after 8 on Wednesday the 9th, and we're going to take up the Board of Games statewide proposals. And I guess I would start. Everyone should have received the minutes with all the proposals in numerical order that came out of the Game and Trap Subcommittee. And I would first ask if any members of the committee had a particular proposal in that packet that they wanted the full AC to bring up. And that would be any other than the ones that are already marked as full AC in the far left-hand column.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Pinker?
I think a short discussion on the proposals like 107, which are a repeat from previous board cycles that we have voted in opposition to, and we took no action this time. It's relatively significant to me that we express the same either support or lack of it for proposals that we have in the past. Mm-hmm. And I meant to do that for Mark. Well, we went to the first seven. I didn't have the energy to get it done. So for some of these that cycle back every time, I think we need to just kind of look there. 107 is one that's done that. It's been in there a couple of times. And that's one we really need to, you have to ask yourself on some of these, do you want that in Fairmax? Because sometimes they, you know, some of these are a little more regionally oriented, even though they're statewide proposals. So I would like to just kind of peek at these as we go through, even though you'd like to maybe try to capture them all now. And if we see one like that, where people recognize that we have done something similar before, that we go ahead and get it. There are a couple in that category. For example, 122, which is lowering the minimum hallway for those of big game. We've had lots of discussion on that issue, and we've always opposed lowering.
That's asterisk. So those ones I didn't mark,
the ones with the asterisk
are actually ones that we should probably go over because we did comment on it.
Okay, yeah, and I noticed that some of them say forward and some of them.
Yeah, so any of the ones asterisk, I thought we might go over those. 107 wasn't one of those though, Mike. Do you want to go over 107?
I would like to go over 107 to just be consistent, but I'll leave it to the committee because I don't want to take up any extra time for it. The DNA is not going to cause us much worse.
242 was the one.
Okay. I want to pick up 130.
Yeah. 242, Levi wants to go over that one. I have that one.
I have 144, 145, and 171.
133. Also,
the 135 to 139, I think it is. Those are the repeal 207, yes. You want to go over those? Virgin, we supported the repeal.
So some of those, Virgin, we've
already done that.
Some of them are right before.
Yeah.
No, one of them. It's that.
173 is our proposal, right?
135 is ours, and we supported 136 and 137 as well.
Yeah.
Did you have a separate?
They're all basically the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you want to bring those?
I'd like to have a quick
discussion. Okay. Okay.
Okay. I don't see anybody on Zoom trying to get my attention about any particular proposals just now.
What about 129? Require the use of expanding soft point bullets for taking big games.
That's asterisk up for the full ACL.
Oh, thanks, Mark.
By the way, it was your comments that had me review these and put those asterisks on that we should probably comment on these. So,
thanks for that, Al.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
All right. Okay. First one.
$149. We've opposed one. You want to bring that one up? Okay. All right. Let's see.
Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to go ahead with this under the rule where he has put where we need to talk about the full AC so we can move as quickly as we can. And then when we get to those where we have comments and we have a support or whatever, let's go through those just as quick as we can unless somebody has something really different they want to put in there or a comment additionally to add in or something like that.
Okay. 101, change the definition for bows to include crossbows. This was marked to bring to the full AC. Anybody have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, that was the board area.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mr. Blum.
Crossbows and bows are different.
This is our proposal.
I teach hunters, ed, bow ed, and crossbow education for the state.
Well, you know,
crossbows are a lot more efficient. We have almost 100% talent rate and skill test. Whereas with a bow, we have about a 30% first time fail and about a 70% pass rate overall. So, primitive weapons, you know, it makes the hunt a little more difficult. And crossbows, they're a more efficient way of killing the animal, which is good to kill the animal and not wound them, but I think that they should have their own classification, just like the education requirement for it. It's separate already. I think it should be separate.
Mr. Chairman, I won't add anything, but I agree with you by totally.
Are we on 101? 101. I just add quickly that a lot of this seems to be spurned by the idea that some people can't just shoot a bow, and I would note that you can apply to the department for a disability exemption permit to allow you to use a crossbow in an archery-only hunt. I actually have a friend that has one, and it wasn't a big deal for him to get it and prove that with his condition he's just incapable of shooting a bow.
This is like looking forward to 102 for the definition of primitive weapons. I don't want 101 to decide what we decide on that, but I think crossbows can be grouped in primitive weapons simply because they're not as good as a shotgun or a muzzleloader. And some of these hunts that we have along the road and stuff, I think we can put crossbows in there. So I think they have a place. Maybe not in just a bow hunting area. I don't want to group it with a bow. So, but I think it should be put in with primitive weapons because if you're going to allow a shotgun, I don't see any problem at all with a crossbow in that hunt. So, but I, you know, again, I don't want to put them with the bow only hunting. So,
there's really support for 101. Put that in.
Well, but I was jumping ahead to 22 because I don't want us to say 101 and we're also focusing on a separate
question.
I agree with you on 101, but I want to support 102. So.
Gotcha.
Anyone oppose? Does anyone object to opposing 101? Not seeing any.
Okay. Let's real quick. We will oppose it.
102.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Lum.
When it comes to muzzleloaders and primitive weapons, I think it should be caveated that it is not an inline, because an inline muzzleloader has a longer range, almost like a large-bore rifle. So if we added something there, maybe where it had to be a percussion cap or went off, there'd be a true primitive weapon.
Excellent. And we have another, if I can, Mr. Chairman, we have another proposal that seeks to add optics to muzzle loaders. Sure. And that should not apply to primitive weapons, aren't it?
But that's down.
Well, another comment we might make to take care of that right here would be to say, well, optics on either a crossbow or a muzzle.
And I I do believe that's, you know, that's in statute now, that, you know, muzzleloader hunts, you can have a stove on it. So.
So did you want to put the comments in about the inline?
I think we can support it, but we don't support it if the inline muzzleloader is included in that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah.
Mr. Brett.
Oh, I would like somebody to define what optics are.
Scopes in the case of the proposal that's in there now. Magnification.
Scopes, magnification, not red dot sights or other things that doesn't have a magnification greater than the eyesight.
Because so the motion is in support with those caveats in there, no inline muzzleloaders, including no magnification.
Yes. That sounds good.
Yeah, we're not trying to keep them from being able to sight down the weapon. We just don't want them to get the equipment. There were huge arguments when the compound bow came out.
Well, you know there's a difference between a sight and magnification, a scope.
Yeah.
And it has to do with the human eyesight.
That's correct. Okay. Don't wear it, his glasses won't qualify.
You want to make a motion to support? I make a motion to support 102 with those caveats.
Second.
I'm going to ask for unanimous consent on the motion. Is there any objection? Hearing none, that will be the action of the committee.
Good catch.
Next one would be 109. Is Dave Lowry?
What about 107? Did you want to take us 107, the ad?
Oh, right.
I just wanted to make that comment about being consistent. Because this time around, I don't think it matters. Just for the sake of moving along, I move that we accept the committee's recommendation for 103 through 109.
Second.
I'll ask for unanimous consent on that, and I'll also add that I think we can take care of that by at the very end, just moving that all recommendations of the subcommittee not taken up by the full committee be endorsed and do them all in one big block.
Yeah, 109 actually is up for the LAC, Mike, 109, and Dave Loring was supposed to be here to answer. Is he on?
We can do that at the end.
Yes, he is.
What is that?
Do we want to go over 109?
Sure.
That was 1 week.
This is Dave Loring. I'm standing by Katie.
Thank you, Mr. Loring. I had very bad cell signal when I was listening to this part of the subcommittee meeting. I think Mr. Loring went in pretty thorough detail with the subcommittee on these proposals.
He did.
The one that was marked for full AC is 109, the microchip requirement. And Mr. Loring, can you remind me, is this something that resident falconers are generally in favor of or disfavor or
the current regulation requires microchipping of all falcons or hawks that leave the state of Alaska, and that was done by the board after we just requested microchipping for just the large falcons, deer falcons and peregrines. And so this is going to benefit just about everybody to eliminate the microchip requirement except for deer falcons that are taken by non-residents under a permit issued by the Department of Fish and Game. And the reason we want Pillsbury's microchip, they have a high value. They've been subject to illegal activities for years and years, both in Alaska and Russia and throughout the country, mostly going to the Near East, Iraq, Iran, those places. And so we want to keep that microchip requirement in place and eliminate it for everything else. There's really very little transportation of other birds outside the state.
Move to support 109.
Second. And Dave, you have it. Mark, you really don't have any concerns with removing the microchip requirement on the other falcon species?
We do not, no. All the propagated zero falcons are all highly regulated by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They have seamless bands that are put on it, basically at birth, and the bird grows into them. They can't be removed. And then when residents leave the state, they have to do an import-export permit to the Department of Fish and Game to get that bird out and bring it back in again.
And did this proposal also, was this the one that included that the microchips have to be databased in that
yes,
database?
That's correct. And this proposal also asked for the a registration that was kind of overlooked at when the meeting, the 2014 meeting, 2016 meeting, when this was first put into place. And without a registration into an international database, similar to what you do with your dog, or with a parrot or a macaw or any of the other exotic bird species out there, it basically is useless. We can't go back and find it. So we'd like to put that housekeeping measure in.
Thanks for that explanation. I'm going to ask for unanimous consent on the motion to support 109. Is there any objection?
Mm-hmm.
That'll be the action of the committee. Mr. Barrett, quickly.
I was just curious on how many times a bird has been recovered and a microchip or a band has been used to return it to its owner.
The only band I know that's ever been recovered was one that Travis Boone's banded in the Yukon Delta as part of his PhD project. And that band was actually, that bird was migrated to Russia, was picked up in Russia illegally, and that band was found in United Arab Emirates.
I just seen it with one of your comments that it would be good because, you know, if microchipped wild birds, Alaska source, or if microchipped wild Alaska source birds is recovered, it will provide a valuable tool for law enforcement for their investigation and return it to the, you know, the proper owner.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's, I guess we can only relate to what occurs currently now with parrots, macaws, minor birds. Those birds are all happy microchipped, and lost stolen birds are constantly being returned to the owner there.
So not so much the birds of prey in Alaska.
Oh, because this has only been in Texas for a few years, Mr. Brett. And
okay, thank you.
To my knowledge, nothing's been recovered yet.
Appreciate that. 117, require hunters to possess proof of completion of required educational certifications in the field. Essentially, the debate on this the center around, well, is there really a problem at all that needs to be fixed? How many of these tickets are being written? And whether the onus should be on law enforcement or on the participant. I just throw it out there that, you know, if law enforcement makes a contact and gets driver's license number, hunting license number, name, phone number, address, all the things they usually get when they contact somebody, it's not a deal to go back and look it up and then send them a citation for a minor offense or have the court issue a summons for a criminal offense after the fact. That's my thought.
Very legalistic. My question was a little different, and the answer is fine, and that was, this is the same date that we exempt all the others from, all the other exams. And so if you were one for these base, you don't need to go get these education things. And
prior to 1986.
Right. Right. If you're not required to have the certificate, yeah, you're not required to carry proof of a certificate that you are not required to have.
This just makes it the same as the others. that's why we put the track meter. So where are we going? So 117?
Are we still split on 117? Is that the thing? That's why we brought it to the full AC.
I mean, if you're wondering, I oppose it.
Then we should probably take a roll call vote.
Oh. Can I ask a question?
Quickly.
Yeah. doesn't this fall under the affirmative defense when troopers that you have to prove yourself innocent?
Well,
Jeremy, we should put this on the table before we discuss it. I move we support 117.
Second.
As to Mr. Barrett's question, sort of, if you, I mean, if you're not required, if you're required to have it, and you're not required to have proof of completion, the burden remains on the government to prove that you don't have it, which is one of those interesting prove a negative.
Yeah, so if they accuse you of it, you have to prove yourself innocent.
That's certainly not how I would argue it if I was representing somebody. Mr. Lucas.
That was the question I asked of Chris Byrne. And like he said, if he had to go back and somebody, he would let the person continue to hunt. But, he, you know, who would do that knowing they're in the wrong? So I'm with you. I think we can call a question on this.
I don't think there's a problem in this area. You know, it's very good. Very big. Yeah. I took it, my son and I, and I had no idea what happened with the paper they gave me. That was just, well, in the first place, they didn't work it in on this.
Roll call vote, and I'll just start with myself. I oppose. Mr. Richards.
Oppose.
Mr. Opie.
Oppose.
Mr. Lucas.
Oppose.
Ms. Vick.
I'm reaching for the on button.
Gail, are you there?
Mr. Umpenauer.
Oppose.
Mr. Tinker.
Oppose.
Mr. Wisniewski. Is he there? I don't think he's there. Mr. Llewellyn.
Opposed.
Mr. Siegfried. Mr. Smith.
Opposed.
Mr. Duke.
Did you hear me, Kirk?
I did. Mr. Larry.
Opposed.
Mr. Kramer.
I'm sorry, Kirk, I was distracted during the discussion of that, so I'm going to abstain unless I hate to do that. I didn't listen to enough of it to.
Come on. I appreciate that. Mr. Derek.
Oppose.
I got 12 oppose and 3 abstentions. Well, 2 abstentions, and Mr. Wisniewski is not with us. Okay. 121, to allow the use of dogs to hunt big game. Someday Mr. Richards and I will have to have a conversation about him being one of only two permit holders in the state to hunt bears with dogs. I have no idea. Anyway, anyone have any thoughts on this one?
I did it once. Got 8 hound dogs up to Montana. They actually minded really good in the boat going all the way to But the problem with the bears is you don't want them to take a grizzly bear, only a black bear. So, and if the well-trained dogs, what ends up happening is the dogs take off more than else you keep up with them. And you have to go back about 24 hours later and then we let them off back.
Mr. Tinker.
Mr. Chairman, I think we would probably benefit by saying allow the use of dogs to hunt bears.
Yeah, I was going to comment.
I get off of big game. I really don't want to see them hunting bears and moose.
We brought this to Hawaii Sea because we felt it was overly broad.
Right.
We already have regulations on the use of dogs to hunt bears. Yeah. You're allowed up to 2 dogs. There's specifications. I would move that we oppose this. It's just overly broad.
We already can do that.
You just have to get a permit.
Yeah, I
couldn't
say it. That's what I'm saying.
So we make the motion in the affirmative and move to 4121. I'll take it in with a lot more discussion.
Second.
I don't remember Robert's rules with me, but I think I can ask for unanimous opposition to the motion to support.
Or the same way you do that, you can ask for unanimous support. If nobody says anything, then you're okay.
They are guidelines.
Yeah, that's right. They're advisory only.
Yeah.
I don't hear any objection to that, so opposition will be the action of the committee.
We will oppose 122.
122 to lower the minimum draw weight for bows for hunting big game.
Move to support.
Second.
I was taking opposition to this too.
We've already, yeah, and our comments make that out that we said 5 pounds, not much of a difference. Don't think change is necessary. So,
and if there's a reason the person can't, they can get a
yeah.
I think they could probably get a disability permit to use a lower draw weight as well, if that met their needs.
Yes.
Any objection to opposing 122? I'm seeing any. That brings us up to 125, allow the use of crossbows for hunting big game in weapons-restricted hunts. I would incorporate my comments from earlier.
Second.
Any other discussion?
It just goes in line with earlier, you know, it's crossbows can be under primitive weapons,
yeah,
but not in
yeah
a bow-only hunt. I think that,
yeah,
many of our
comments. Same kind of.
Yeah.
I'm definitely opposed. Yeah. Mark, are you getting all of this for the minutes?
I printed out the comments from the subcommittee meeting, so I'm kind of referring to that as we go. I'll let you guys know if I fall behind.
All right. Just want to make sure you can hear us.
Any objection to opposing 125?
So, I started to bring it back up. So, this is just in weapon restriction hunts.
Yes.
So along the roads again with shotguns and muzzleloaders.
Right.
So what's the problem with using a crossbow?
Well, also bow only are restricted hunts.
Yeah, this is
we're making that
right. Okay. That's the point. Okay. To not allow this in bow only hunts, archery only hunts.
Okay.
Yeah. But didn't the board change the rules to allow crossbows like targeted hunts a couple years ago?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay. So that part
is lighters,
that part's already been taken care of. 127 to allow air rifles for hunting big game. Comments from the subcommittee is too broad. No definitions for energy, bullet weight. Mr. Lucas.
Yeah, I'd like to bring up in the subcommittee meeting, a lot of people didn't know or they have no knowledge of the air gun. I just wanted to bring it up to everybody that I've looked into air guns. They're they're out there. They're expensive. A lot of them have anywhere from 22 to 2800 coming out of the barrel. So they're shooting just like a rifle, a 30 caliber. I would support it. I don't see a reason to oppose it just because we don't have knowledge on these weapons. Most of them are very expensive. You're talking entry level, $2,000. You know, one of these gets so high that I don't think you're going to have everybody running out buying one tomorrow to start a hunt.
In the discussion, my thought was that this is too broad and that we can certainly support this, as Jeff says, if we put the caveat in there that this has to meet an energy requirement. Because these things, they're like 400 caliber. You can kill a really big and dangerous game with them, but not with the one you buy at Safeway. Or Fred Meyer's, you know, I think
so. It would have to be muzzle velocity or something.
Yeah, something like that. So the
air cannon caliber, right?
Yeah, it's putting something on the board to call that, but I would say we would support it with that. Otherwise, we need to propose it. And you can make that comment, leave it TNA if you want to, and then make sure that what we understand, they understand what's in the comment.
Well, what about the air bows? Did you look into those too? How do those work? Because they include the air bows.
Oh, I didn't see that.
So
yeah.
What is that?
Well,
is it a crossbow air bow? Is it
it's got a canister, you know,
5,000 feet.
Spear gun.
If you want. I mean, yeah, it just shoots a projectile. Spears, I don't pull it.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think you can cross them, but yeah.
I would move we take no action on this one, really.
Put our comments.
Yeah, but let's put in there that we think this is too broad a definition.
And that's what we have on there from our subcommittee.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we only have caliber and energy requirements for bison.
Bison and,
what about
I thought we had one for
You want to go shoot a moose with a 22 Hornet? You can.
Centerfire.
Huh? Right. 128 prohibit the use of mechanical powered bodysuit or devices.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Brett,
you know, just on that last proposal, you know, that proposal is a little misleading because it talks about, first of all, allow air rifles for hunting big game, which is under 80, you know, which they're talking about 85, which is all hunting seasons, and then it goes right into air rifles used for taking all game. So there's a difference between all game and big game. You know, and air rifles can be very, you know, smaller caliber, less pressure, can be very useful in small game versus, you know, big game. So this proposal's a little bit complex or misleading because it talks about two different opportunities.
I think that was just a fault of the proposal.
Yeah, my recollection without looking it up is the current regulatory language in the prohibited methods and means is may only take big game with center fire rifle, except that sewing caribou can be in unit 23 can be taken with rimfire.
But once again, he's quoting 92085, which is seasons and bag limits. Yeah. And not underneath the you may not section under 92-220 or something.
No disrespect, Al, but we'd rather the board have to figure out whether air rifles are center fire or not.
Yeah.
We can figure out everything for you if you give us an opportunity.
Prohibit the vehicle powered body suits or devices. This was sort of TNA or bring up to the whole committee.
Move the support.
Second.
I'm going to speak against this. I don't think we're ready for this kind of thing.
No. I agree.
Would it be considered motorized in a non-motorized car?
You're just not old enough yet, Mike.
The reason the subcommittee TNA. So a lot of these, well, not a lot, but these proposals, is it just felt that, you know, our opinion wasn't really going to matter with some of these like this one. We felt sure that the, you know, this was going to probably pass the board, and we just thought it took up too much time. So.
There's confidence in you.
Mr. Chair, I would disagree with that. I think that the AC should make a formal.
We'll
vote on that because that's just an assumption on, you know, one person's prerogative of the board. I think the AC has a, you know, they should take a yes or no vote on this and give some comments to the board members.
I move to support 128.
Already been moved.
Yeah.
Moved and seconded.
We're done.
Any objection to opposing 128? Mr. Lucas,
no.
So that'll be the action committee.
Support.
Support 128.
Yes, we're going to support 128.
129, require the use of expanding soft point bullets for big game hunting, excluding wolf and wolverine.
I move that we oppose 129 based on the comments. Overly broad concerns about availability of ammo in certain areas. What about hard cast lead bullets? Will they be outlawed? Copper bullets?
Could they have a definition and codified on what expanding soft point bullet is?
No, they don't. And, you know, this was kind of the point I was trying to make, that if this was going to be put in regulation, I think there would have to be a definition of it because otherwise it's unenforceable. And then how is Sergeant Valentine supposed to look at somebody's ammo in the field and then know whether it's designed to expand or not?
Overly broad.
A lot of bullets that hunters people use are solid bullets. And they expand some.
South Point Indian.
Did we have a motion yet on that one?
I think that is
a lot.
Everything I'd like to.
So we're 1 by 9?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move to that.
Sorry.
Any objection to opposing 1.9? Seeing none, that takes us up
to... Who wants to go over 135, 136, 137, I think?
I'd like to talk about 130. You supported it, I don't support it, and I'll tell you the reason I don't support it.
130, or wait, you said what?
130, I do have it. I do have it.
Because chronic wasting disease, that's why they put it in. It should be commercial urine for the lower 48. That way, you shoot a moose, he has a lot of urine in his bladder, you can take that urine and sprinkle it on a tree or whatever, and I've hunted lots of moose, and we've killed lots of moose, and probably 30% of the time or so, the next day there's going to be a moose right there because of the urine smell.
But you buy the stuff from Canada, you put it in your own bottle and say, yeah, this is from another.
You can but also, that you can just take that, you know, take the bladder. I imagine every one of you is careful not to bust the bladder. Roughly,
make it
out of urine run all over the tree. And so you can just take the damn bladder and pour the urine out when you want it. Anyway, I think there should be a discussion on it, and it could be amended, but I don't think you should make it illegal to use
Alaska
the urine from the moose that you killed to attract another moose.
Yeah. This was a supportive move. This is the
part. So, Virgil, you're moving to support it with an amendment that you can use the urine from a moose taken in Alaska, or...
In the same game, maybe. That would make it your claim.
How would you ever be able to enforce that if you're a police officer and you said, this is yours, so this is mine right here, because I just got it. You could just put whatever you wanted in there.
That's a lot of important issues.
There's nobody that can say, yeah, I got this from Canada, or I got this from, and then say, no, I just got it.
Well, they would have a container that the urine came in.
So you can put it in whatever you want.
Or well, I know you can do that. There's like a lot of regulations. There's ways you could, it would be really hard to violate the regulations. I don't know. Well, most people aren't going to violate them anyway. If people see that, they're not going
to
go
to
urine in the lower 48.
You couldn't do that. They'd have to have one or the other. You'd have to be able to use it.
Is Tony still on?
Tony is still online. Alex, stand up. I don't know. You could send the urine to the crime lab. Have it genetically analyzed.
Yeah, why don't we ask Tony if they've discussed whether it's Alaska or not? Or is this intended for outside species?
No, I haven't heard any discussion about this at all, so I honestly don't know. I think it just stems from commercial purchase. I don't think there's been the thought of using, you know, just one from your own moose.
Well, we could support it with an amendment to only apply to commercially sold urine, if that's the direction we want to go.
Well, it's not commercial or non-commercial, it's imported, right? I mean, if I get mule deer urine out of Montana and put it in my carry-on and bring it back to Fairbanks, we don't want that either.
Mm-hmm. I would like the department to address that question. See, the problem is right now, nobody's addressed the question.
Yeah.
Trying to educate myself here. Is this a statewide?
Yes.
So this would apply to deer in Southeast?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any member of the deer species?
Yeah,
they would be more vulnerable.
Al, did you have a quick comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. You know, when it comes to commercial and deer urine or the deer family urine, they're highly regulated in each state. And I don't see how, you know, deer urine that's sold commercially from a commercial deer farm that is tested regularly regularly for CWD is any kind of impact on our state. And, you know, if you went to, you know, like others have said, if you went to where you harvested a deer out or a moose or a deer out of this unit, you could use the urine out of it. You know, Sergeant Valentine would just be pulling out what a little Harry's got, because there's no way he'd be able to distinguish where that urine came from and if it was from that unit or not. So I think there is some protocol on commercial uses of urine that we need to look into. And I think the state, you know, overstepped its bounds, you know, several years ago when they banned the use of commercial deer urine, you know, the possession of commercial deer urine, without really looking into, you know, what commercial deer urine producers have to abide by, you know, for regulation wise.
Mr. Chairman, may I also lay out?
Please.
I move that we change the Permit Advisory Committee's recommendation to take no action.
Second. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any objection to TNA on 1:30? And it still allows to comment, incorporate all the comments.
Sure.
135, repeal the restriction on the use of aircraft for locating dull sheep for hunting. This is the AC zone proposal. It was supported in subcommittee. Mr. Umpenow.
Okay, the reason why I don't support this, I'm going to make this as fast as I can. President Hunter has been asked to put in all kinds of proposals, and other few other people, about restricting non-residents from sheep hunting. And so what ended up happening is then the department spent about $250,000 for professors at the university to do a study on what sheep hunters liked and didn't like. And this went on for several months. And Nicole Wallace and I both participated in him gathering all the questions he's going to ask all these deer hunters. And then they sent out these questionnaires to, I don't know, several thousand sheep hunters, both residents and non-residents. And then the department came up with proposals to address this after they got that. But in the meantime, they also hired some guy that was a facilitator from Quebec or some damn place in eastern Canada.
Oh, yes.
And they had these meetings all over the place. I mean, anyway, and he was supposedly had never failed to get a compromise, really failed to get a compromise for sheep hunters. And so then the board made up these, I think, three proposals. You know what it was, Mike? I don't know what they made up. Anyway, several proposals. And so they were going to hold a meeting in Wasilla. And at the time, I was the chair of this AC. And so we put out a public notice that we were going to have a meeting and address the potential proposals that the board was going to address a week later in Wasilla. And so we had approximately 80 people come to our meeting, and we went over this results of the survey. And one of the things that, one of the proposals was, I think it was proposal 270, I can't remember.
207,
whatever it was. Anyway,
most of us were in the room, Virgil.
Yep.
Well, some of us were in the room, not all of us.
Tell us what the news is.
Anyway, so what ended up happening is about at least 70% or so of the people at our AC meeting were in favor of that.
Of the AC meeting.
And then I think, and I think
were in favor of?
Yes.
Yes, they were in favor of proposal 207 because it pissed them off when they're out hunting sheep and they spent several days to try to get in possession of a sheep, and then some Super Cub jockey comes along and chases them off. That's why they did it, and that's what the people were bitching about. And so, then, I think five of us, Al was one of them, actually went to Anchorage, or not Anchorage, Wasilla, for that meeting, and they only had about 150 people there. We have around 80 at our meeting here, and the board passed it. That's what ended up happening. But anyway, that's a little history on it. But since then, I talked to a number of people, and they like it. They said it's much more quiet out in the mountains and makes for a more quality hunt to not have some guy come along in the Super Cub looking for sheep and trying to find a big ram to go hunt and chases off the sheep that you've been trying to get for several days. And so a lot, and that's why I oppose it. That's what the majority of the people that came to our AC meeting, you know, whenever that was, 5 years ago or 6 years ago,
that's what they wanted.
That's what they wanted to happen. And then talking to people afterwards, you know, the last, right afterwards especially, you don't have all those people flying all over the damn mountains up there when you're hunting. It's staring off the street. That's why I'm opposed to it, because that is what the majority of the people that came to our AC meeting gave us input. That's what they wanted. It doesn't really affect me personally.
Mr. Lucas.
I think we should take a roll call vote on this one.
Move support.
You know I love you, Virgil.
Say again.
You know I love you, but I'm going to disagree with you on this one.
Okay.
It's quieter up there because a lot of us aren't going to places where we know there's illegal sheep, and fewer of us are. You know, we got the means and the ability, but we aren't going because of the pressure on the resource, habitat-wise, and the icing and everything else. So I think it's just quieter in the field, period. I think the language they adopt, so the happy with it, I think, may be for different reasons than the fact that the regulation passed. Also, the way it's written, it's unenforceable. You're already not allowed to go harass the game and shake them off. That's already carried in somewhere else. And the idea that you're not allowed to spot them, we better only see white rocks up there and close your eyes if you see a sheep.
That's only after the season opens, so there goes a lot of
I mean, this is our proposal. Was there that many people from our AC opposed to this when we supported it and turned it in?
We won't know until we vote. There are lots of regulations and laws that are hard to enforce. So that's...
Troopers are on the record of talking the only way, the only way this is enforceable is if there is a camera in the cockpit with audio so we can definitely be assured that that pilot was scouting sheep with the intention of killing that specific sheep. The troopers have always opposed it. Almost all of the ACs opposed it, Virgil, when it came down. It was a board-generated proposal at a work session.
Sorry. I'm going to vote to support the committee's recommendation.
We should probably take a roll call vote.
I also still believe that it's preempted by federal law. On the motion to support Proposal 135 to repeal what is commonly known as 207, Mr. Derrick.
To support the repeal.
It's 206.
206. Now you're telling.
You asking for my vote there, Kirk?
Yes, Mr. Derrick.
Support.
Mr. Kramer.
Support.
Mr. Larry.
Support.
Mr. Juki.
I do not support.
Mr. Smith.
Support.
Mr. Siegfried.
Support.
Mr. Llewellyn. Mr. Tinker.
Support.
Mr. Umpenauer.
Oppose.
Ms. Vick. Mr. Lucas.
Oppose.
Mr. Opie.
Support.
Mr. Richards.
Support.
I support.
I got 9-4.
That's what I have. 9 support, 4 in opposition.
Can I just ask, like, you guys that were at the subcommittee that voted to support this, what happened? What changes your mind?
You may have to ask them after the meeting.
Okay. I don't understand why we do this at the subcommittee and then we change our minds, but okay.
136, 7, and 136 and 37
are the same,
as 135. TNA to action 135.
Well, all the way to 139.
Well, they're different. Are we TNA 136 and 137 based on action on 135?
Yep.
Well, and yeah, and one.
One thirty-eight
would essentially eliminate the youth hunt loophole in using aircraft to spot sheep.
Yes.
My thought on this is I don't like it, but if it's going to be in place, it should be in place for everything.
That's my thought as well.
Not 90% of it. And that is that's the subcommittee comment. And so are we good with the comment or do we want an actual position?
I'm comfortable with the comment.
Yeah. We'll stick with CNA then.
Yeah.
With the comments included.
Yeah.
139 is the same.
So, no, 139, well, yeah. Right, same, okay.
As okay, yeah. 135, 67.
That would certainly qualify as draft.
Yeah.
Unless it was BLM, that would be okay.
Sticking with the TNA and leaving the comments on 139.
144, 145 on the cast. Mr. Tinker, did you want to take action on those?
Actually, I really like to back up so we don't get too far in the field here. Yeah, 144, where am I? Where's the cast?
Yeah, that's
right. I like to start at 142 and oppose the evening.
Is there some risk of emu species creating wild populations to roam the frozen tundra of Alaska and outcompete our native species?
Yeah. Actually, that's not it. But some investigation will tell you why these guys put this in, and you flat won't believe it. This is a not a honest approach here. And I think, well, now, you don't have a problem with the emu, whatever, statewide. And otherwise, we need to vote on it because I'm going to oppose taking them off here.
Pull the curtain back.
I hope somebody looked at the emu wars of Australia.
Yeah, they did not win. Australians lost.
Any desire to pull the curtain back on the nefarious, unstated purpose behind the emu proposal? No. I'm going to be in the dark on that.
Okay, this is good. CNN, that's fine.
On 142 and 143, Mike, you're...
Yeah, that's okay. Fine. I made my comment. I'll write my own letter and say, don't do it. Or I'll take my air rifle, 40 caliber round, 5,000, shoot him in the foot,
leaving the bird.
Following the discussion, you bifurcated the issue and only just a few moves, and now we're on the cast.
Yeah, now we're on cast. Yeah, we're 144, 145.
Yep.
Mr. Lucas,
I'd just like to bring up that I'd like to oppose the release of cast rather than turtle, fixed, anything. I come from Ohio, and as a kid, my dad told me when I started squirrel hunting, you shoot every cat you see in the woods.
But you're
we did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, we used
one. Well, that's what killed that bird.
So I don't see a reason to be releasing cats into the wild for any reason, whether they're feral, sterile, or not. So
yeah, the strategy is they're going to sterilize, you know, loose cats.
Yeah.
And that's okay to have them out there. Well, they're in competition with every other type of or wildlife that's trying to also eat the same food mix.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should oppose turning any kind of cat loose in the house.
Yeah. Well, isn't 145 essentially the reverse position in that any cat that was less let loose would be classified as deleterious exotic wildlife, but you could just...
Yeah, that's fine.
And I was in support of that because he opposed.
Well, I move 145.
Well, not exactly, because it would be legal to release them. It would then just be legal to shoot them as soon as they're released. So,
we have to divide the question. We have to do it one at a time. So let's back up. I remove my, with permission, second. Remove. Move to support 144.
Second.
Okay. Got a question?
Any objection to opposing 144? Seeing none. That'll be the action of the committee. 145.
Move to support 145.
Second.
Do I have unanimous consent for support of 145? Don't see any objection. I'd also just note quickly that there's the Alaska Supreme Court case called Dorman, I believe, that involves how the board defined deleterious exotic wildlife in the context of previously captive bison on Kodiak that could create issues for this proposal. 149. Create separate doll sheep permit draw for second-degree kindred hunters in areas that limit number of non-residents.
So we have opposed that. Virgil wants to bring it back up. Or Levi wants to bring it back up. I don't know who did want
to. I think Virgil wanted to bring it back up. Yeah. Virgil,
right. I want to bring that up.
You would.
I don't want wherever we put in a non-resident allocation, and we've separated the residents, I mean the guided from the not guided, or the next of kin, then I don't think that that should be changed. And there's a number of reasons why I don't think it should be changed. But anyway, my guide area that I have, and I know all you guys know this, is the guide area there, that was done through a working group that lasted 3 years for the whole Koyukuk National Wildlife Refuge. And what the group decided on is 20% of that permit would go to non-residents. And then after that happened, and then 80% residents. And that's for the general hunt. Because anyone that's a state resident can still go there and go hunting on the subsistence hunt. And then what happened is a whole bunch of people put in for permits over there and got the permits, and then they didn't go hunting. And so I put in, and I actually had one guy call me up from somewhere back east, I can't remember where. I don't even know how long it would take you to drive to Galena if you rented a truck in Fairbanks. And anyway, so I went to the board of game and I put in a proposal to split that out 20% allocation in half, and half of it go to guided non-residents, and then half of it go to non-guided non-residents, and the board passed it. And after I did that, then
41 minutes for 130 proposals. 41 minutes for 130 proposals.
Okay. Well, you're aware. Anyway, that's why I did it. So you're aware that the villager is just a doll sheep.
This proposal doesn't pertain to moose. It only pertains to doll sheep.
Okay. Well, there's one here that's going to count on everything.
And it wants to separate out the permits in various units, so it makes clear what it wants to do. For example, 13D, DS-365, one permit to a 2DK hunter, seven to a non-resident,
So it's very specific in what it seeks to do. So
aren't we headed for 151 here?
Yeah.
That's full AC in my paper here.
Right, yeah.
Okay, let's go and move to the score 151.
Second.
What is, are we, well, are we taking action on 149? Virgil, you want us to vote on 149?
Well, I'm not so concerned about 149, but when we get to the one that's been put me out of business, I'm dead for it.
Understood.
So, well, all right, so we're moving along to 151?
Yeah. Now we're moving second. Now you're ready.
I'm trying to summarize this as quickly as possible. Right now, there are drawing permit hunts for non-residents where the boundaries of the draw permit hunt area exactly overlay with federal guide use concession areas. And in those areas, when for either allocation to guides or guide-required species, you cannot put in for that drawing hunt as a non-resident until you have a signed guide-client agreement, which basically means that if the guide that has that guide use area chooses not to put any hunters in, all those permits become undersubscribed, and then those hunters that have contract with that guide can just go pick up an over-the-counter permit after the draw period. And I know this is a fact proposal, right? And
yes.
Am I wrong? Is that a fair summary, Mark?
That is a fair summary. Right now, the best example of it is if you look at the draw hunt supplement, like if you look on Kodiak, you look at Naysary on Uintah, you'll see zero applications. And it turns out in talking to Natalie, and this is in our proposal where we bring this up, that those are not actually per se undersubscribed. The guide just decided that he did not want to have his client apply for the permit. And so, and the reasons that some of the guys gave when this was brought up is, one, some clients don't want their name to be public record. They mentioned like a doctor. He doesn't want his clients to know that he's a hunter because it looks bad. And the other, the $5 application fee doesn't really mean nothing, but the point of this is that residents are required on all draw permit hunts. We are required to submit an application fee to apply for that hunt, and our name is a public record. The same is not true for non-resident guided hunters for a lot of these hunts.
Unless.
You can't draw with me. I have to apply for those people, and if I don't apply, like there's permits left over, they're over the counter.
We talked about this.
That's what happens.
Yeah, the hunters are paying the application fee. What we're trying to do is get them to pay the application fee like everybody else.
Yeah.
They
should have to go through the same process that residents do.
Okay,
but they do, because residents can take over the counter for undersubscribed hunts too.
No, there's no loophole for that, but that's a real undersubscribed hunt, though. These aren't really undersubscribed. The guide is deciding who gets to hunt. Some guy calls him, I want to hunt with you. I understand I need a guide-client agreement. And in our proposal, we've got things on this where somebody says, I just hunted Kodiak 6 times. You know, he's able to do that because he doesn't have to go through the draw permit.
They have to pay the application fee when they pick it up over the counter?
No.
Or they pays it for them?
No.
So that's my concern. I could care less about some of the nuts and bolts, but I want everybody to pay the application fee.
Yeah. And their name should be in the public record. Yeah. That's the other thing.
I pay the application fee for everybody.
And I applaud you for that. I told you that. You're different.
Well, I have to. It's in regulation. I have to do it.
Well, it's not in regulation for the Kodiak and the New England hunts. It's not in regulation. The board specifically created that loophole to allow what's going on. Another thing that's happening is when this came up, the guys on Kodiak are admitting we don't use all the permits. We don't utilize all the permits. That shouldn't be allowed either.
What you want to do, Mark, is when doing this is ridiculous because it's already done. With me, it damn sure is already done. I don't know about Kodiak, but I know with me and with the Uintah permits, It's already done. We have to apply, and I put them in for the permit 6 times, is what I do, because I want them to get the damn permit.
It's just not happening everywhere, Virgil.
Well, I don't know what's happening in Cody yet, but I know that.
CCR.
And then the Whitmer Refuge and the Koyukuk Refuge, those permits, that is done.
Now, I don't have any problem with requiring the other guys to do the same thing you're doing, Virgil. That's what this does.
Yeah.
As well as the playing field.
Yeah.
Everyone should be equal. We should all have to adhere to the same regulations.
If not me, I'm using my body suit. Where was that?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm wrong. If you're over 78, you get to use the body suit.
Anti-gravity.
Except the legislature when it comes to the PFD.
You're confusing the issue again, Greg. Right? All right,
well,
vote on that one, or what are we
going to
do?
Call the question.
Call the question.
Yeah,
I'll
just
call the question.
Second. Support or opposed? Question has been called. Virgil, you thinking you want a full vote on this?
Yeah, I'm going to say no if you want a full vote, okay?
I think we'll have a full vote on
it. It's irrelevant
to me. And I appreciate that you do go through it, Virgil, I really do.
On the motion to support 151, Mr. Llewellyn.
Support.
Mr. Siegfried. This icon's still there. Mr. Smith.
Support.
Mr. Juki.
Support.
Mr. Larry.
Support.
Mr. Kramer.
Support.
Mr. Derrick. Mr. Tinker.
Support.
Mr. Umpenauer.
Ms.
Vick.
Support.
Mr. Lucas.
Support.
Mr. Opie.
Support.
Mr. Richards.
Support.
I oppose.
This is John. Support.
Thank you, John.
No. Did you say you're opposed, Kurt?
I'm opposed.
So what about 11-2?
11-2.
Yep.
Can we go back to John? Is he just not here, or how are we recording his
John name? Was?
Or no. So John did reply. John Siegfried.
Yeah. John Siegfried voted in.
Yeah.
John
replied.
Isn't with us.
And he
also 169.
No, he supported. I'm on a tick mark. Let me come up with a better system.
About 30 minutes.
161, change the salvage requirement for sheep, goat, and deer to all meat on the outside of the ribs. This would essentially eliminate windowing out between the bones. We took no action in subcommittee, but did comment that, this is not a big deal to get it off.
161, pretty.
It was 61?
Yes.
It's in the news finale, game advisory committees.
Right. I don't support it.
Everybody's pretty quiet.
I don't support it.
Yeah.
As I said in the subcommittee meeting, I usually, when I don't take the rib bones, I roll the ribs, and it's very easy to roll the ribs and get that meat in between the ribs all in one piece, so it's not that much of a problem.
Yeah. Mr. Lucas?
I move that we TNA this because it is from another advisory committee, and instead of opposing them, just TNA.
Which is the recommendation.
And leave our comments in there, Jeff?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Second that.
160. Mr. Chairman, this is Al.
Yep.
Only because a different AC recommended this is a statewide proposal. It has no regional or sub-regional areas for statewide. So to say another AC is supporting it or not, or it came from another AC or not. I think that's taking the easy road out and say, well, it's coming from a different region, but it's a statewide proposal.
Point well taken, but sometimes you gotta do that. 163, count wounded big game animals towards the hunter's bag limit for all units require additional action in the field from hunters that attempt to take game. Subcommittee comments was TNA, but impossible to enforce, don't always know animals wounded. I know years ago in speaking to bear guides in Southeast that they have a similar requirement down there, and they wanted it, and they pushed it, and they like it, and the reason that they like it is because it's a client control technique that they can sit and tell their clients, no, we're not going to take any long shots, and the reason we're not going to take any long shots is if you screw it up, you're done, we're going home, and they can basically force them to do what they probably ought to be doing anyway. It seems to me as a statewide proposal, I don't have any problem with it down for Southeast Bears, especially if the locals like it, but I don't see that it needs to be statewide.
So your exposure, the locals like it or the guides like it? So, the guides testified for it, the locals were not so enthusiastic.
Well, the people I spoke to were local guides.
What I mean.
Yeah. It's been 15 years, well,
yeah.
10 years. But Al, quickly.
How does that differ from the definition of take?
Why don't you tell me? You're the board member.
And it's pretty clear what the state says the definition of take is.
I would also say that the Southeast regulation has, I believe, the wording about drawing blood.
Shooting at something meets the definition of take.
Right. Attempting it is a definition of take.
Getting dressed and grabbing my gun and going out the door.
I mean, but that's another one that's totally unenforceable.
Yes, I don't see it as a hard thing.
Just pull our DNA and pose us.
And that's what we had opposed because it's almost impossible.
So we TNA'd it, but we could oppose it.
Move to support.
Second.
And I would request a vote so that we can indicate whether we support or oppose this.
Question been called on 163.
163? Yep, all the questions.
Mr. Tinker.
Opposed.
Ms. Trumpenauer.
Opposed.
Ms. Vick. Mr. Lucas.
Opposed.
Mr. Opie.
Opposed.
Mr. Richards.
Opposed.
I oppose. Mr. Llewellyn.
Opposed.
Mr. Siegfried.
Opposed.
Mr. Smith.
Opposed.
Mr. Juki.
Opposed.
Mr. Larry.
Opposed.
Mr. Kramer.
Opposed.
Mr. Derrick.
Opposed.
Sorry, if you're just asking them.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Mike, you're still in up here.
Somebody was out there with a support.
Mr. Chair, I oppose also.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yeah.
Thank you.
14.
So can we do
64
said
stuff?
Yeah.
So can we just
TNA 164 based on action on 163? Any comments on 164? Okay. Yeah. I forgot to screw that up. Supposed to be see comments on proposal 163. 171, somebody wanted to go over, I think, virtual.
No, yeah. Mr. Lucas, did you want to take up 171?
Okay.
This has changed the boundary between.
No.
Oh, yeah. 160. Well, I was in support of the ACs. They have two different separate ACs in that area, but it's not split.
And I don't know why we couldn't, if it's already got two separate ACs, why isn't it split into two areas? That's all they're trying to do, right?
Yeah, well, you can remember that Doug Kearney and I mentioned the subcommittee talked about this, and we had decided since this was a dispute between two advisory committees, it was best left for them to hammer out their differences.
So basically, the rear guys and everybody else.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Well, with that.
Well, I mean, it's not like you can say go to this range and that range is the river all the way through or the highland all the way through.
Okay.
I think our comments make it clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to. Where we're going.
Do we want to live in TA then?
173?
171.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. But are they on 173 now?
Yeah, that brings us up to 173 to repeal the Dalton Highway Corridor Management Area. Is our proposal?
Oh, we didn't get 168.
Oh.
Yeah, and again, we talked about this a meeting. We don't have full support among the AC, so that's
similar. So we didn't have a subcommittee meeting.
Right. That's why we brought this to full AC for a roll call vote.
So,
Mr. Lucas.
So I was in support of this. I don't see a problem with it. The corridor up to the river, the Yukon River, you can shoot. I work for Alyeska. They shoot the pipeline all the time. So, you know. We used to go out and patch holes. Another shot. We all know that somebody made it through, but I don't see a problem with making the whole corridor open. People talk about the tundra. There's roads up there. There's gold mines all the way through Coldfoot. I've been off road up there. So I'm in support of this repeal.
LASC used to publish caliber. We had to have a really big caliber to pump the pipe. It was a test show to 30-ounce section. Pull the hole in without any problem at all.
Couple of brothers in Levington.
Yeah. So, I mean, even that one shot six times, and then it was the sixth one that finally did it. I mean, it's, I could show you the holes all up and down the line, but I don't see a reason to keep that corridor. I mean, we all know you used to have a permit just to drive up the road before they gave it to the state. People in Wiseman ride their snow machines in Fort Wilmington all the time.
And use their rifles.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I don't see a problem with it. I'm in full support of this.
I just want to say, Chairman. So we already have a herd in the interior that you can hunt off the road, you know, the 40-mile herd. And, you know, if that herd changes its size or the bag limit and the Arctic herd or the porcupine herd grows and we have that herd right on the road, we can have the same problem that we have with 40-mile right on the road. So if we get rid of that corridor and allow a rifle hunting in there, we could be having a problem down the road a little ways.
That could, speaking from the other side of that, that could lessen the load on the skis too. Because if you go up there and shoot,
yeah, I would think break it up. Yeah. I would say it's just the opposite. It's the fact that if we needed to do a population control in the corridor, mm-hmm. right now it's impossible.
You'd never get it.
You'd never get it. That'd be my reason. That feel like
I was going to say that one person's problem is another person's opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
On some level, the entire regulatory language for the Dalton Highway Corridor Management Area is completely superfluous because of the statute.
Right.
And so repealing the regulation doesn't really change anything. Mr. Barrett and Mr. Kramer.
No, Mr. Chairman, you got it. That's what I was going to represent, that the regulation only mirrors the statute.
Mr. Kramer and then Mr. Tinker.
Does this proposal open the corridor to firearms or motorized vehicles or both?
Everything.
Both. Everything.
You would remove the regulation.
It would allow motorized access, summer, winter, rifles.
Yeah, it's all about the right? That's my point. That's what I'm
next.
Yeah.
Mr. Tinker.
I would like the board to put on the record that the original purpose of putting this in there, the safety of the pipeline, has been proven to be BS, and it's time that we back away from it. Mm-hmm. And if we don't do something like that, the legislature is never going to look at it. But if the board game would show that there is a opposition to this and there's really no reason for it, then I think we can get the legislature to listen. Right now, the legislature plays it off the board again. Okay? Go limit the testimony for the last two or three bills that said repeal. And that's what they said. Well, the board game likes this, they've got the management area and all that. I want to take away one side of them playing off against each other. You know, it doesn't mean we can't go back and put some regulations on how to hunt in there. We just need to get rid of this management.
It's all done so we can build a damn pipeline. That's why it's done.
And it's done.
So this is one from the proposal before this that we're supporting. Our proposal is what caused the department to submit 172. We submitted this proposal with the motivation that the board would clarify some of the issues that we brought to them about motorized vehicles, about like taking an animal, a trapper taking an animal across that wasn't allowed because it was considered game.
Yeah.
And that is going to be discussed in 172. I just wanted to mention that we have already had some positive reaction from our proposal.
I need to ask a question. Okay, it used to be that if you had a trapping license, you could shoot fur bears inside the fence from the road. Can you still do that, Al?
I think that's generated outside, but wasn't it? Yeah. Riding a snow machine, too. You can ride a snow machine to get to generate outside the corridor and go through it.
Can you still shoot?
You can still shoot under a trapping license on the Dalton Highway in the corridor.
During the trapping.
So you can. I'm trapping. I'm not hunting.
I'm trapping here.
Yeah, we're going to have to take a roll call, though.
Yeah.
Thank you for recognizing me. I will be concise. But while the regulation was written by order of the statute, and we may receive testimony from the attorneys that there has to be a reauthorization because of the statute, it would be the first step in repealing the statute. And so your comments, you know, you're an attorney, right, Mr. Chairman, and so the comments adding to the record of the reason to repeal the statute will be taken from that meeting. So while you may expect that it would be shut down for the reason that it has to comply with statute, those comments on the record will be used to the legislators to readjust the statute.
Statute that's not in Title 16 and has nothing to do with where a game does.
John, I move to support the comments that we've got over so far from the committee in total.
Second.
I would just like to add to that, Mr. Chairman, that you know, in 2010, when Mike Kelly had a bill introduced into the legislature, you know, the greatest opposition came from the semi operators on that road. And a little bit from Wiseman and Bettles, and a little bit from, you know, the North Slope Borough. But basically the multiple or the largest portion of opposition was semi-drivers due to safety concerns on the road from allowing hunters access to, you know, big game opportunities north of the Yukon River. And, you know, furthermore, what this was all brought up originally was because the statute or the regulation says you can't transport any game with the use of motorized vehicles. So if you had a piece of moose jerky in your pocket or you had a marten that you caught on your trap line within the 5-mile corridor, it made it illegal.
Yep. That's my proposal. When generally got
you had a bird wing and you were going to use it to try to catch a marten, it was unlawful to transport that within the 5-mile corridor.
So we got to be out of here by 10.
We have to have another meeting
here.
Coming up, we'll spend 10 to 15 minutes on that along.
We could do that. We could reset.
That would be a...
with public notice in time, you promised to do on the 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we can do it. I'll send it out now. Move to recess and reschedule full AC meeting to a later date.
Yes.
Sometime next week.
Yep, we'll get our comments.
What is the final action on 173, though? Are we taking a roll call vote, or are we...
It was moved and seconded.
Yeah, we have time to do that. Before I do that, Mr. Opie has his hand up.
I was just going to ask the same question that Mark asked.
Is there
Is there any chance you can do the antlerless reauthorizations tonight?
Sure, I guess we could.
That's probably a good idea, just in case something goes sideways between now and next week.
Call Tony.
Appreciate that. Ms. Vick?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, my understanding of this proposal is that it's to elicit comment by the state. You know, we've been discussing that. If you want to say that C1 is an issue, my oldest is up at Bettles right now, between Bettles and Colfoot, working on that winter road, and there's so much pressure on that winter road now, and that's going to increase. Unfortunately, I don't like that idea, but it's going to. So that is an issue. But because this is really relative to eliciting comment from the state on the change in the regulation, I will probably support it. Am I correct in that assumption?
Well,
yeah. All right.
If you want to table the one we're on and go to the rentals,
let's finish up 173. We have time. So on 173, I'm going to do a roll call vote, and I'll start Mr. Tinker.
Support.
Mr. Rumpenauer.
Support.
Ms. Vick.
Support.
Mr. Lucas.
Support.
Mr. Opie.
Support.
Mr. Richards.
Oppose.
I support. Mr. Llewellyn.
Support.
Mr. Siegfried.
Support.
Mr. Smith.
Support.
Mr. Jokey.
Support.
Mr. Larry.
Support.
Mr. Kramer.
Abstain.
Why?
Mr. Derrick.
Support.
Of
12 and 1 or 1 abstention.
That's what I have, 12 to 1 and 1 abstention.
That's what I have as well.
12-1-1. Mr. Chairman, I move to support proposal 174 through 190.
No, we don't. We just want to do it in our veto authority, Mike. We don't want to comment on anything outside our veto authority.
Okay, which one do we need?
Or 255.
Okay, so what is it?
255, 256, 257, reauthorize antlerless moose seasons in 20A, 20B, and 20D.
I just want to remind you about the brown bear reauthorizations.
That's 190, Al.
They've been renumbered.
Yes,
that's all right.
So we take them off for our area. Yeah, I got just do that. We're talking about 83, 84, 85.
No, they're not 83, 84, and 85. Those were done at a Zoom meeting before.
So we're going to...
The new ones for this cycle are 255, 256, and 257.
Move those.
I just wanted to make sure, Tony, the concerns I had about this, you did say at our last meeting that I wanted to put in our comments that if we support this, you're not going to have an antlerless hunt next year in 20A. Is that right?
That's correct. We've already gone through the process to issue anybody that put in for drawing permits their money back, refund their money. So we're not going to issue any antlerless permits in 20A. We don't plan on holding Minto Flats antlerless hunt either, but we are going to hold the FMA hunts. Can, you know, allow moose around town to be harvested.
I just want to get that on the record that we are supporting it with those caveats.
Do I have unanimous consent to support 255, 256, and 257? Ms. Vick.
Sorry, that was from before. I'll take it down.
Al.
What about Nana 28 hunt, antlerless hunts?
I'm not going to hold that hunt either, Al. No 28 hunts. No 28 okay. Antlerless hunts.
Thank you, Tony.
We're adjourned. Be back next week.
Recess.
Well, I prefer to do it Wednesday if, I mean, assuming that we can make it happen. And
if we can make it happen, we can do it pretty quick.
Now, just, we can have it whenever via Zoom, right? If we have no in-person and we don't have to find a meeting location, it's really easy. That can be a for sure thing. I guess.
Sorry, Al.
Hey, you got
it.